A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mia, visste du att 4 av 10 svenskar har problem med magen varje månad och att var femte upplever att magbesvären styr och hindrar dem i vardagen? Och det är faktiskt bara hälften av de här som gör något åt det. Och faktiskt är det bara 20% som har en diagnos.
Jag tänker att det där beror på att det finns så mycket stigma och okunskap när det kommer till magproblem. Att många lider i det tysta och inte gör något åt saken.
Men det finns så mycket man kan göra för att stötta sin maghälsa, och ett sätt, det är att få i sig mer fibrer.
Absolut, för många svenskar får i sig för lite fibrer. Och förutom att se över sin kost så kan man också komplettera med ett fiberrikt tillskott. Och då vill jag lyfta vår sponsor Husk, som vi har ett betalt samarbete med och som gör tillskottet Husk Mage i balans, som då mycket riktigt har ett högt innehåll av just fibrer.
Husk Mage i balans är ett kosttillskott som är gjort på kostfibrer från psylliumfröskal. Och psylliumfröskal bidrar till en normal matsmältning och en normalt fungerande tarmfunktion, både vid lös och hård mage.
Husk Mage i balans finns i 3 olika varianter. Husk Mage i balans klassik, mjölksyra bakterier och nyheten jordgubb, som förutom psylliumfröskal också innehåller krispiga jordgubbsflingor för en god smak.
Det är enkelt att göra Husk Mage i balans till en del av din vardag. Kosttillskottet kommer i pulverform och du kan enkelt strö det över kalla rätter som exempelvis yoghurt, eller blanda ner det i smoothies, juice eller varför inte bara i vatten.
Superdupergott och stötta din maghälsa helt enkelt.
Ja, och sen kom ihåg att kosttillskott inte bör ersätta en varierad kost. Det är viktigt med en balanserad och varierad kost och hälsosam livsstil.
Vi säger tack Husk!
Jag plinkar lite på mitt piano och tänker på hur kul det är att Johanna Gillbro ska vara med i det här avsnittet. Den internationellt erkända hudexperten och hudforskaren Johanna Gillbro. Vi är så stolta, Johanna, för att du vill vara med i detta avsnitt. Men bara så ni vet, så är det så att den här intervjun har... den spelades från början in för vår engelska podd The Food Pharmacy Show. Det är därför Lina och Johanna kommer att prata engelska i den här intervjun, trots att de båda är svenskar. Ja, då vet ni. Hörrni, nu kör vi.
So, welcome to The Food Pharmacy Show, Johanna Gillbro.
Och där avbryter jag på en gång faktiskt, för att jag glömde nämligen dela med mig av den glada nyheten att Johanna är vår nya gästskribent på foodpharmacy.se. Så det kan ni kolla in när ni har lyssnat på den här intervjun.
I'm so honored to have you here.
Thank you so much, likewise. Very nice to be here.
You are a skin scientist and the most cited writer within the Journal of International Cosmetic Science. How did your interest in skin start?
Well, I was actually diagnosed with a skin disorder, a skin disease called vitiligo, when I was about 3 years of age. And so first of all, then, what is vitiligo? Well, Vitiligo is a depigmentation disorder where you get white patches on your skin because the pigment cell, the melanocyte, is dysfunctional, so it can't push out the melanin or pigment to the surrounding skin. So that's why you get white patches on your skin. And there are different types of vitiligo, but I think most people have seen this disorder, especially maybe on a colleague or a friend or someone outside in the summer, for example.
I actually know quite a few people
who friends or
friends, and I have actually 3 children in my surrounding who who has it.
And are they bothered about the vitiligo?
Yes, they are.
Because when I was a child, I actually liked my vitiligo. So now, for example, when I will come to that, I suppose, but when I worked more with vitiligo in my professional life, I've seen so many parents that are devastated about their kids getting this disease.
Because the parents are devastated.
Yeah. So, and then they are transferring their anxiety upon their kids. And if I compare, for example, to my parents, they were fantastic with this because they were just promoting this as being something unique and cute. And so that was the kind of feeling about the patches that I got with me when I was a child. So
you felt unique.
Yeah. I felt very unique, and I actually compared myself to, you know, the spotted dog, a Dalmatiner, which was my favorite dog at that time. But then during my teenage years, I thought it was quite, troublesome to have vitiligo.
So why?
Because I think most people feel that when you're a teenager, you don't want to be unique. You want to be exactly the same as everyone else. And I was the same, so I started to cover up. And at that time, I also started to get a lot of vitiligo in my face.
And that's harder to cover
up. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, on the body, you can always cover up with clothes. But then I started to use makeup. And the makeup, I was quite, which I think most people with vitiligo feel, that you maybe avoid swimming and this kind of things because then the makeup gets destroyed in the pool and stuff like that. So during my, let's say from 17 to in my 20s, I thought it was really, really tough. And that is when I started to read scientific articles, and I read everything that was published at that time about vitiligo. So already when I was like 17, 18, I knew about the melanocyte. I knew what they thought was the problem with vitiligo. And already then I started to try everything that was on the market, both, you know, already then it was online sales of different kind of creams, cosmetic creams that with big promises that didn't work.
I was about to say, or no. Did they?
No, that had no effect. And also the medications. I went to several dermatologists and I tried everything from corticosteroids to UVB therapy when you are like you're standing in front of a sunbed. And I tried, I was even one of the first patients who tried a transplantation of healthy skin cells, to the patches. So, and that also didn't work. So nothing worked for me. And
how did that affect you? Did you get more and more worried about your sickness?
Yeah, I think so. I got, at that time, I think I got a bit obsessed, to be honest. So that was, you know, and I also, I think that is why I became a scientist also, because I have very easy to really get very catched up on things. So if I'm interested in something, I get super interested, and that accounts with everything. So if I'm like...
So you're like the perfect scientist then?
In one way, because of that, but in one way, not because I don't have the patience enough. I want to... to have quick results, and that doesn't always work.
No.
So in one way, I'm a good scientist. Mm.
So then you actually started to study, not only on your spare time, but also you started to study science and skincare.
Yeah? Yeah, exactly. So then I started to study pharmacy school. Mm. In Uppsala, and I was very interested in, I was kind of choosing between pharmacy or a medical doctor, and I chose pharmacy because I was very interested in drug development then, and also drug development within dermatology. Mm. So then when it was time for us to do our master thesis, I actually went to England, or I contacted all the groups in the world that was working with LIGO. So it was one in Italy, one in England, one in the US, one in Japan. I wrote emails then to all of them.
Wow.
And yeah, and it was one professor that answered on this email, and it was Professor Karin Schallreuter. She's a fantastic woman. She is my role model. So she's a dermatologist and a scientist. And at first she was working in the clinic of Minnesota, the Mayo Clinic. Mm-hmm. She's German from the beginning, and then she moved on to Minnesota working on melanoma. And then she found...
Oh, you mean like cancer?
Exactly, so skin cancer. Mm. And then she found that when the melanoma is treated, you very often get a white patch around melanoma.
Mm. Like vitiligo almost.
Exactly. So then she started to work more with vitiligo, or she wanted to know what kind of compounds is it in these white patches, because it seems to actually destroy the melanocyte, which is a good thing in melanoma, but not a good thing when you have normal skin and you have vitiligo. Mm. So it's the same kind of mechanism. And then she found that these compounds that you have in these white patches that are destroying the melanocyte, that is the same type of compounds that you can find in certain butterflies.
Mm, wow.
And in butterflies, it's there to, first of all, to light it up, light the butterflies up in the dark. Mm. So you have this fluorescent color, which you can also see in vitiligo on the skin.
And that's the same if a person, you taught me that once, if a person with vitiligo goes to a disco.
Yeah.
In the night, it lights up the spots.
Exactly. Yeah. And that is also very, so many vitiligo patients have, it's quite hard to go into a disco because that is when you really, it lightens up dramatically. So you can see it a lot. And it even if you have covered up with makeup, it sometimes lights through.
Oh.
So that is these compounds which are called the pterins. And in the butterflies, they actually also use these compounds to attract the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it's quite a very interesting story. So in one way, this is what I think it's so amazing with vitiligo in a way, that it's just, in one way, it's just a cosmetic difference. Mm. It's exactly like we have, dogs with white patches.
Yeah, exactly.
Or so why would it be anything that would be disturbing in one way? It's only a different kind of feature.
I'm thinking about, there is a huge supermodel.
Yeah.
And she has vitiligo. And my friend whose daughter has vitiligo showed me this person, and she said, this person, she has helped my daughter so much.
Yeah.
Because she is really proud of her vitiligo. And she has like millions maybe of followers on Instagram. So yes, it's just a mindset, I think.
Exactly. Mm. And this, we can discuss, we can talk about this for hours, I think, because, Wynne Harlow, this model from Canada, she carries her skin and her vitiligo with exactly what you're saying, with such a proud.
Mm.
And I think that this is something to kind of think about, not only when you have vitiligo, but any kind of imperfection, so to say, which is in our society seen as an imperfection. It could be a pimple or a dark patch or whatever. But as soon as you start to carry something with pride, it's totally different.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
people don't see it as an imperfection.
I actually, this started me think about when I went to a high heel course here in Stockholm. It was a bachelorette party, and I was going to this high heel course, and it was a man from Brazil. And we were just Swedish young women. And he looked at us and he said, I mean, no one of you can really walk. And we were like, what? And then he put on the high heels and he walked like, I mean, it was the most fabulous walk I've ever seen. And he said, this is how you should walk. And I will now tell you one thing. My friends in Brazil, they think that Swedish women are so beautiful. They come here and they, because they're not used to the way we look here. And they think that all Swedish women are so beautiful until they stand up.
Really?
Yeah. And then he said, women in Brazil, even if they weigh 150 kilos, they carry their body with pride. And they carry themselves with pride, you know. But in Sweden, we tend to hide, and you know, no one should see me and stuff like this. And so this reminds me of him, because it's true. If you see someone who carries whatever they have with pride,
yeah, exactly.
It's that makes it unique and beautiful. So I think that it doesn't matter whatever the problem is. Back to this German professor.
Yes.
Did you meet her? You went to see her? Or
Yeah, exactly. So she invited me to do my master's thesis at the University of Bradford. So she set up, it's a department called the Center of Skin Science. And I was there, and that was... This period in my life was the most interesting period, full stop. It's I am so happy that I did that. So this master's thesis on vitiligo, so I did my PhD actually on the beta 2 adrenal receptors, so the adrenergic system in melanocytes, because they are responding. What we know about vitiligo is that it's very... It could be triggered by stress, and the adrenergic system is, of course, involved in stress.
Yeah, because it's important to say this is an autoimmune disease.
Yeah.
That's actually increasing over the world.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It's quite difficult to say if it's increasing, because normally we say that about 0.5 to 2% of the world population have it. And it differs.
As much as 2%.
Yeah. So 2% and even 4% has been reported in India, because in India it's very, very hard to have vitiligo, because it's connected to leprosy. So because it doesn't, I don't think that it looks the same, but it's there in that
Many
region.
Many people believe that you have leprosy. Okay,
exactly.
So they get scared and try to stay away from you.
Yeah. And I've met many Indian patients now, and they are really pushed away from their family, and they have difficulties to find a partner, to get married. And,
oh, how sad.
Yeah, and I've even seen, it has been awful, but I've seen, you know, parents if one of the kids have vitiligo, they don't want to take that child with them when they go on into parties and stuff like that. So it's horrible, the things that are going on in that region.
That's really sad.
Yeah. So during my time in Professor Sharda's team, I worked on the adrenergic system, and I also worked a lot at the Dead Sea in Jordan, because what she had found was that a treatment called climatotherapy, which means that you swim in the Dead Sea and you're also exposed for limited amount of irradiation from the sun at the Dead Sea, really promotes skin pigmentation. And based on that, another scientific result, she also developed a cream which is working to break down hydrogen peroxide, which is oxidative stress that we have a lot of in our skin. So in vitiligo patches, for example, you can have about 1 millimolar levels of hydrogen peroxide, which is huge. And it's what scientists has been troubled with, is that how could even the skin be so nice and intact, because you can't see anything else except for that it's actually white there. So it is very difficult to understand how these high levels of hydrogen peroxide can actually exist. But this cream is then breaking it down, and then we see that by applying this cream, we can get our skin pigmentation back. So when I started there, and I did my entire PhD also in Bradford, then I had a lot of white patches in my face, around my mouth, around my eyes, around my ears. And within 3 months, I gained 90% of the pigmentation back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that was progress.
Yeah, that was amazing, actually. Amazing. So,
because you can't even tell, I think, that you have vitiligo now if I sit here and look at you.
No, I have a little bit just under my mouth, but that's just a tiny, tiny patch left.
So then you were happy, but you still wanted to work with skin?
Yeah, so I wanted to continue my work with vitiligo after my PhD, but as I think many people know, it's not so many groups that are working with vitiligo in the world, and still not now. I mean, it's still seen as a cosmetic disorder, and it's not very easy to get academic grants for research within this area. So what I did then was I moved to Holland because I met a Dutch man at that time. And but when I was living in Holland, I was constantly approached by the cosmetic industry.
So why did they approach you, do you think?
They approached me because since I had worked on gaining the pigment back, so the mechanisms that actually is responsible for you're getting a tan, or you get pigmentation back in the vitiligo patches, I knew then, I knew basically pigmentation and skin pigmentation. And in the cosmetic industry, what you want to do is to sometimes turn off this pigmentation instead. So for example, if you have irregular pigmentation, or you have more pigment in your face, for example, like brown patches and solar lentigo and things like that. That is, of course, very interesting then for the cosmetic industry. So, and at that time, I also was in the middle of a separation, so I wanted to move back to Scandinavia and Sweden. And so I took a job actually as a scientist in a skincare company, and later also working on being responsible for innovation in that company.
And this is a huge industry. I mean, we spend billions and billions of dollars into this industry. Last time I met you, you said that normally interest and knowledge goes hand in hand. But in this case, when it comes to skin, you feel that it's a huge interest and we are willing to put a lot of money on these products, but there is not such a big knowledge. It's a lack of knowledge within this area among the people who are buying the products.
Yeah, I really think you're right there. And it's a very interesting phenomena what we see. And I start to see it, especially when I start to work more on innovation and met the consumer. And it is very interesting that we are spending so much money on our skin, and we are spending a lot of both money, but also kind of time thinking about our skin. And this is not a new phenomenon, of course, because we have been interested in our skin and in our looks for, you know, thousands of years. So we can even see in texts thousands of years ago that the importance of having a clear and nice and even skin tone is very important for the perception of beauty.
Mm.
So it has been, of course, always very important. But now there are also, of course, linked to so many products and a commercial world which we are living in. And this is something that really caught me, that I think within the industry that you are working on, within health, many people are more, are very interested and they are reading things, but there are more scientific-based texts and articles and books about
health issues.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And within the cosmetic industry, very often the companies themselves are owning the communication.
Mm.
And that is very specific phenomena because, for example, since there are not so many academic groups that are working on skin and skincare and normal skin and what skincare is actually, skincare benefits and stuff like that, it's and I think that is totally fine and good that academic groups are not, you know, focusing on cosmetic research, because maybe our tax money shouldn't go to that. But what happens with this is that the companies themselves are making the studies internally, and they are also publishing the studies around this themselves. So they are owning all the data, they're owning the studies, and they are owning the communication to the consumer, which is very special.
Mm. Yeah, so it's very hard for a normal person like me, for example, to get like neutral information.
Exactly. Yeah. And to be totally honest, I don't think that we are, that, I mean, I think when I see my friends, for example, or meet people, these are super clever people. But when it comes to the cosmetic industry, we kind of grasp things. We believe things that we want to believe. And sometimes these things are quite crazy.
So it's because we really want to be perceived as beautiful.
Yes.
And so we grasp in everything we can get.
Yeah, think so.
Yeah. I agree. I've read your book, The Scandinavian Skincare Bible, The Definite Guide to Understanding Your Skin. And this is also why we invited you here today, to make some clarification, because we know that there are many people out there who want to know more on this subject. So I could really recommend this book to everyone who wants to know more about your skin. And in your book, you have a few commandments, like 10 commandments, if I'm not wrong. And I thought that you could guide us in this landscape by going through some of these commandments that you have highlighted in your book.
Yeah, sure.
So the first is, think less is more. And this is interesting because if you go into a store, you could almost think that more is better because there are so many products. And here you say a long list of ingredients doesn't mean a better product. In fact, the opposite is true.
Mm.
So tell us.
Mm-hmm. I think I would like to discuss 2 points here. So the first one is to understand, why do we often see so many ingredients in skincare products? And this is something that I go through in a big part of the book. So inky lists and how to understand them.
Mm.
But basically what we have, basically in the skincare or the cosmetic regulation is as follows, that you should have 30 months, which means almost 3 years shelf life on the products.
That's a really long shelf life.
Yeah. And most people doesn't know. So, I mean, it's when you, for example, are in the grocery store, you're very used to look at, okay, when is the milk produced? When does it expire?
Mm. The expiry dates is so vital when you buy something you put in your mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But in this industry, the consumer has never even thought about it often. Mm. So the only kind of expiry date kind of thing on the package is a open jar symbol. So if
a jar is open, you have to throw it away within 12 months.
Yeah, exactly. Or 12 months normally is this open jar. And with that symbol, it doesn't say anything about when the product was produced. It could be your product, for example, that you might buy tomorrow might already be 2 years. It might have been on a storage in China, and then it has been transported. And the interesting thing is that there is also no control for temperature during the storage, during the transport, during, for example, in the shelf where you see all these nice products. Often there is a light on top and then the products are getting very warm. And then not to speak about your bathroom. I mean, there it could go up to 40 degrees easily.
Yeah.
And I always compare this to what could you imagine to put your creme fraiche, for example, during this kind of circumstances. No, never. You would always. And this is the kind of crazy thing in the entire thing, that we have set these regulations that, okay, we should always be able to have skincare in room temperature. We should not have to have temperature control, for example, put it in the fridge, et cetera, et cetera. And with that comes a problem. And the problem is that we have to have quite many additives. And
so by putting a low standard on these products, we have to painted ourselves into a corner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. So it would be exactly the same as we would say, oh, but I want to, for me, it's much simpler to have my creme fraiche and milk and everything else that I have in my fridge on. I want to have it in my cupboard. And I also want to be able to have that on my sofa table for 6 months.
Yeah, that's an interesting experiment to think what would happen if you put your butter, for example, on the table.
Exactly.
And go to this jar all the time with your hands and put in your face and stuff and put back your hands in the jar.
Yeah.
What would happen after 6 or 12 months?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So if you would have a creme fraiche like that, which is has a water content or a liquid content, then you would get a fungal growth very quickly. And that I think most people have seen.
So why don't we get that in these skincare products then?
Because we have preservative systems and it is quite a lot of preservative systems. And this is a couple of years into when I worked in the, I worked actually almost 10 years in the cosmetic industry, but a few years in, this was something that I really thought was, I thought it was very challenging to work with innovation when we have such a strict and robust and unmovable kind of regulation around this. It's the only innovation you can do if you don't innovate on the logistics, transport, production. You kind of are just doing innovation in certain compounds which you add on to this already existing kind of regulation, which I think needs to be changed.
So, an innovation with this within this area could be to have a fresh skincare product.
Yeah, exactly.
That you put in your fridge.
Yeah.
And that you can use just for a limited period of time.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about the studies that are being done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the studies, are they done on these products when they have been on the shelves for two years? And how are the studies made?
Mm. Yeah, so when you do clinical trials on the product, for example, if you want to know if it's anti-aging, if it reduces the wrinkle size, for example, then you, of course, as a company, you do that on fresh batches. You don't take products that has already been on the shelf for a long time to do the studies. And this was a second thing that I really questioned during my time in the industry. And that was that, I mean, within the pharmaceutical industry, we have very strict demands on that you need to control for that a substance is viable during the entire shelf life. So you as a patient should be absolutely sure that you get
vitamin C, for example.
Yeah. Mm. Or if you buy a pharmaceutical product like paracetamol, you should definitely get 500 grams if you buy 500 grams.
Yeah, by the end of the shelf life.
Yeah.
And that's not the case for skincare?
No. So there is no legal demands on companies to actually control for that the customer get the same concentration of substances that are put into the product. So that also, I think that is something that definitely needs to be changed.
I mean, considering how much money many of these products cost, I think it would at least be something that you should... I don't think people are thinking about this.
And no.
You think if you buy something for a couple of hundred crowns, maybe even more,
yeah,
you should know that it contains what it says.
Exactly.
To be containing, you know?
Yeah.
So strange.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
So in a skincare product, we very often have 50 to 100 ingredients. And
50 to 100?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long ingredients list.
That's a very long ingredient list. And then it's also very difficult for a consumer to actually understand what it says, since many of these terms are in Latin. But anyway, so it's preservatives that it contains. It's, of course, also oils and moisturizing ingredients, which are then good for the skin. But it's also stabilizers, preservative and emulsifiers, and viscosity controlling ingredients like thickeners. And this is very important to understand, that one of the most important functions of our skin is, of course, to protect ourselves from the external world.
Yeah.
And external factors like no one should be able to hurt us, nobody should be able to come in and hurt our heart, for example. So it's there as a protection, but it also there is a protection for dangerous compounds to come to enter the skin. And it's actually very good to keep substances out. And we will come into that molecular weight and that kind of things. But many of these additives, like preservatives, for example, are very small molecules. And they are only there to protect the product. So they should be big. They should be as big as possible.
So they can't go through the skin, you mean?
Exactly. But they are very small. So many of these preservative systems are actually skin sensitizers.
So they go into our skin and they harm the skin then.
Exactly. And they can cause irritation. And what we also see is that we have an increase of certain skin disorders, like, for example, perioral dermatitis, which could be directly correlated to the use of different kind of skincare products and the amount of skincare products.
Yeah, because that I read in your book.
Yeah.
That it's more common with skin problems in the parts of the world where we use a lot of skin products than compared to parts of the world where they don't use skin products.
Exactly. And of course, there are not any studies that are actually confirming the reason for this, if it is due to the cosmetic products that we use, probably it's very multifactorial. So, for example, when you, if you live in certain areas of the world where it's also more warm and more humid, for example, you often have better skin there. So it could also be other factors, but it would be very interesting to look into the use of overuse of cosmetic products. And that is already now done. So there was just a couple of months ago an article showing that rosacea, for example, is linked with overuse of of cleansers, for example, and overuse of makeup products. And so we are getting there, but it's not, it's probably quite multifactorial.
I'm thinking about many brands say that it's all natural. And I mean, is it a common question to you that is this cream natural? Because that's what you want to put in your face, isn't it?
Yeah. And this is, we see, of course, this, it has been the last, I guess, 20 years that we are more and more focused on natural skincare products. And now we have all these certifications, like eco certifications and many kind of organs that are certifying the products to be totally natural or organic. But in my mind, as a skin scientist, I've heard, I don't know how many times I've heard the question if a product is natural or not. And I also have just started a skin podcast with a dermatologist, Petra Kjellman. And she's seeing a lot of patients with common skin disorders, like, for example, acne, rosacea, perioral dermatitis. And the patients are getting there way too late because they have tried everything on the market, and especially natural products, which then often in these cases are actually worsening the problem. And instead of seeking medical help straight away, and that is definitely a problem, because if you have acne, for example, and you don't treat it properly, you can get a lot of scars, which are difficult to then get rid of. So, but it is definitely, at least in Scandinavia, there is a fear of buying synthetic products, which then very often pharmaceutical products are, and you want to kind of treat it with more natural things. And in my mind, as a skin scientist, what is natural for the skin, of course, that is not olive oil or shea butter or coconut oil. the things that are natural for our skin is what our skin is naturally producing itself.
Mm.
And that's fantastic because our skin is producing so many lipids all on its own. It's producing even humectants. We have, which we are going to discuss more, we have this layer of bacteria and other microorganisms on our skin.
Like our skin microbiome.
Yes, exactly. So skin microbiome, it's producing a lot of substances and compounds that are in part anti-inflammatory, in part also binds water into our skin. So it's very important for our skin health. So
talking about less is more, it's that if you use more products, you might interfere with your natural microbiome that takes care of your skin. Yeah. Is that so?
Yeah, I would say that you would interfere with not only the microbiome, but also the skin itself.
Mm.
And it's also, by using many products, you also have that problem with that very many times you have maximum concentrations allowed for example, preservatives in one product. If you have then 5 products or 10 products, you get 10 times the amount of the highest illegally
amount. I understand. You get 10 times more than the highest recommended daily dose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's very important to, talking about this, what skincare do you use?
I use very minimalistic skincare. So I'm doing, or I have a team now a platform called Skin On Project, where we actually develop very minimalistic skincare products. So I'm using them.
Okay, so you every morning, tell us your ritual.
I never cleanse in the morning, first of all. So there, because our skin has during the night produced a lot of important substances and lipids, which I don't want to remove. Mm. So I just have a shower normally in the morning where I just kind of rinse with water.
Mm.
And then I have one cream, which is a focus on antioxidants and humectants. And also this cream also contains something called postbiotics. And I'm talking more about that in the book, but it's actually substances that the bacteria of our skin has produced.
Mm.
So it's this good bacteria.
Mm.
So it's postbiotics and antioxidants and oils and other lipids that our skin is producing. So that I'm using in the morning and in the evening, the same cream.
Mm.
And then I cleanse in the evening time.
Mm. Also once a day you cleanse.
Yeah, exactly.
And then do you put a cream on after you cleansed?
Or? Yeah. So I'm using the same cream morning and night. Yeah.
Okay.
And then now we're also developing some additional treatment. So if someone wants to have, some anti-aging effect or some effect on, for example, skin tone, even out the skin tone, for example, we are developing some products for that you also add during the night then. I'm not using more than 3 products, including the cleanser, every day.
Talking about different products, you just said before that we should pay close attention to molecule size.
Mm.
I mean, to have any effect, active ingredients must be able to penetrate. And as you said, the preservatives, they are small molecules, so they can penetrate. But there are, I learned from seeing you last time, that collagen, for example, which is a very trendy ingredient that I think every woman above a certain age have heard of, or maybe is even using. You taught me that the molecule of collagen is a typical big molecule mm-hmm. that can't penetrate our skin.
No, exactly. So for a compound to penetrate our skin, or the first layer of our skin, stratum corneum, it has to be less than 500 dalton, which is a measure of molecular weight. Meanwhile, then, collagen is one of our biggest compounds that we have in our body.
Mm.
So it's 300,000 dalton.
Oh my God. So it's to penetrate the skin, it has to be 500,
yeah.
but it's 300,000.
It's 300,000, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And hyaluronic acid is also a full length hyaluronic acid is about 1 million dalton.
Oh, wow.
So it's, and then of course you can have other compounds which are smaller that stimulate collagen synthesis. That is a different story. But to buy a cream which on the label is supposed to contain collagen,
mm.
that is very unnecessary to buy, yeah. I would say. And this of course is not very easy for the consumer to know, you know, about the molecular weight. But I think from the company's perspective, I think it's very important to actually focus on honest innovation. So don't spend a lot of money on developing ingredients that, you know, can anyway not penetrate the skin, and also make sure that you study penetration. So, I mean, we don't have time to discuss all this at this time, but many times when you test a compound, you only look in a cell culture. So that means that you have taken out the skin cells, you put that in a cell culture, you add these substances, and then you get a lot of effects very often.
Mm.
But it's very important to actually see that you have these effects in vivo, so that you have applied it in a cream form or the product format that you use, and then you see you look at the efficacy. Because I would say that in the market there are many compounds that have never been tested in the proper ways, and they are sold as being effective, but they have no chance to even penetrate the absolutely first skin layer.
Mm. That seems unnecessary to yeah. buy something that can't exactly. even go through the skin.
Mm. Yeah,
I would say. So, I mean, I go through your 10 commandments now, and mm-hmm. I realize that we talked about don't overtreat healthy skin.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right that actually remember that not everyone needs skincare.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this goes for skin cleansers as well. You're right that your skin is smart and it forms a perfect combination of fat and moistures to keep itself soft and healthy. So don't wash that layer off for no good reason. I think this is important to, there are many young people who maybe don't need skincare products, but put a fortune
yeah.
on it.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, for example, I mean, we are sitting now in Stockholm and in Scandinavia, especially, and probably also the UK and the Northern European countries. You can definitely benefit of a moisturizer, for example, during the winter time.
Mm.
And of course, we shouldn't go to bed with makeup, for example. It's important to cleanse that off. But something that I have noticed and kind of reflected upon during my career is that, if skincare products would improve your skin dramatically, that means that women would have a lot better skin quality compared to men, since men are not using that yeah, much amount.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And looking at skin and analyzing skin, I have not seen that, and sometimes even the opposite.
Mm.
So I think that is kind of a good conclusion, that overuse of skincare products is always not
It might even harm you.
Exactly. And to to fully kind of describe this and understand this, we need to understand how our skin is built. And I'm talking a lot about that in the skin, in the book. And for example, we have a very important immune cell in the skin, in the upper layer, which is called a Langerhans cell. And it functions as a, it looks like an octopus with the long arms. And it it discovers and it notices substances that they are not used to. So then if they are not used to something and react and kind of turn on the entire immune system, then you get irritation and skin sensitization. So I would say that if you have sensitive skin, and many people at the moment are reporting a sensitive skin, like 50 to 70% of all European women actually describe themselves that they have sensitive skin. So if so, be very, very careful with what you use. For example, use minimalistic products with shorter inkies. Try to avoid fragrances. Try to avoid specific preservative systems. And we are describing those more in the book. And avoid also certain UV filters, etc. So it's important to, yeah, to exclude many compounds, especially when you are bothered with sensitive skin.
Talking about avoiding products and UV skin, you still think that everyone should wear sun protection during during the part of the year when we're exposed to sun? That goes for everyone, yeah?
Yeah, this is a very interesting discussion, because first of all, UV light and the sun is definitely the most contributing factor for skin cancer. That is scientifically proven now. But it's also definitely the most contributing factor to premature skin aging. So if you, for example, compare your the two parts of your underarm, so the one that is the upper part of your underarm that is exposed to the sun, compared to the under one, there is very different skin status.
Yeah, the one that's not exposed to the sun, it's almost like a baby skin.
Exactly,
it's
and
so
I see
soft
that.
And
I look,
nice.
Yeah, I look at you now. It looks really like a baby.
Yeah, and the other part on me, at least, it's a bit. I have like a few brown spots and.
That doesn't look good.
No, exactly. So I should have had long sleeves.
Yeah, but on you, you can't almost see a difference. But if you look at an older person, you can definitely see it. And also, for example, if you compare breast skin on women, that is very often photoprotected, it's totally different to, for example, than the arm or the hands. So it's, I mean, it's very obvious that the sun is definitely the most contributing factor we say premature skin aging, but that means more wrinkles, more disturbed pigmentation, and also drier skin. So in that way, sunscreen, and especially also protecting yourself to the sun with clothes, for example, sitting in the shade, is very important, so not to be exposed to the strong sun. And of course, for example, this is very different in different parts of the world. So in Australia, where, I mean, I normally speak about UV index. So UV index is a measure of how strong the sun is. And in Australia, it's very strong, very often, during the entire year. Meanwhile, in Sweden here, for example, we have extremely low UV index in October to February. And then I would say that it's absolutely unnecessary to put sunscreen on or even day creams with with UV filters, because it's so extremely low UV exposure. Mm. But then when we come into here in Sweden, for example, when we come into February, March, or March especially to September, we can go up to UV index approximately at 6-7, which is very high compared to then around 0 in November. Mm. And wow. And that is also important to say that there is nothing good with UV filters or sun protection factors. It's nothing that if you're not exposed to the sun,
you shouldn't use it.
No, exactly. No. It's totally unnecessary.
But I mean, you and I are quite light in mm-hmm. our skin color. Is this, imagine if you're a bit darker, should you also wear UV protection then when you're in the sun?
Yeah, it's, we have this Fitzpatrick skin type. So I think that you are probably between a 2 and 3, and I'm definitely a 3. And then if you have darker skin types like 5 and 6, for example, I mean, there is a study showing that if you compare, for example, very light or fair skinned people, so skin type 1 or 2. Mm.
And these, there are 6 skin types.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
Total. Yeah.
So 1 and 2, there you say more Celtic origin, so England and Ireland. Mm. And very often it's also associated with red hair, freckles. And then compared to then 5 and 6, which is brown or black pigment, and you are not very easily burned in the sun. So if you compare those two skin types, it's about, you can be 60 times longer in the sun when you are a darker skin type mm. compared to this very light.
But still you can't be in the sun forever.
No.
I mean, still it's important to protect yourself.
Exactly. Mm. So you should protect yourself, but yeah, it's a person that is having a darker skin type can anyway be in the sun more longer time without being burned.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's also compare, if you look at, for example, these fair-skinned individuals, there is a higher risk of getting melanoma, for example, and it's mm. especially in when we have seen this movement from, I don't know, 1700 or 1800 from Ireland and the UK to Australia. We also haven't adapted to, we haven't had this evolution yet that we are getting darker. So, yeah.
Mm. Another commandment in your book, which I think it's a little bit extra important, is live a healthy life. Take exercise and enjoy nature, fresh air, and being together with other people. Sleep well. I mean, on the back cover of your book, I read that if we knew more about our skin, we would have probably spent less on these products and spent more time focusing on getting enough sleep and having a lot of carrots, for example.
Yeah, and that is, of course, when you think about it, our skin is an organ exactly like the same as our heart, our lungs, or our gut, for example. It's really an organ. Mm. And it's important to look at it as an organ.
Mm.
And most of our organ needs exactly the same thing.
Mm.
So our skin also needs a healthy life.
Mm.
Our skin needs a good nutritional health.
Mm.
Because everything that we put in our bodies is actually also transported to our other organs. So, for example, zinc is very important for our skin. And when we look at the amount of skin zinc, the mineral that we eat, we can actually find as much as 6% of our zinc that we eat in the skin.
Mm.
And then the rest is kind of transferred to other organs. But our skin is really absorbing the minerals and the nutritional factors that that it needs. And then, of course, other health factors, like, for example, sleep is also very important for the skin, because we are also, during this time, you know, when we sleep, we are producing melatonin, and melatonin is a compound that is also important for our skin health.
I didn't know that. I know it's important for sleep, but I didn't know it's important for skin.
It has actually been studied as an anti-aging compound.
Wow.
So that is a direct link with that sleep. Actually, if we get sufficient amount of sleep, we might look younger.
Wow.
So that is very important. And also, what I think is super interesting is that the skin is the only way for us to release, one of the only way to release oxytocin.
And that is the hormone that makes us relax, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And
I read about it when I was pregnant first time, that to make the body release oxytocin is very important.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that is so important for our well-being. And I just actually read a study now that, I mean, of course, we don't get so much when we can't touch each other now during the corona pandemic. That this is actually affecting, of course, our oxytocin levels, and that we can be much more stressed, and it really affects our well-being. And I mean, I think most people can just remind themselves of the feel when someone is massaging them, their neck, for example.
I love that.
Yeah, me too, or the back. But touch isn't just a momentary source of comfort and pleasure. So in fact, it has been shown to have a wide range of health benefits. It's, for example, lowers the blood pressure and brings the pulse rate down. It relieves pain, it boosts the immune system, and it makes us feel less stressed and more sociable. And we can even hunger for touch, just as we hunger for food. And this is what we normally call our skin hunger. So skin hunger for this touch.
I never heard of skin hunger. I love it. Then you write about treat your skin microbiome with respect. And I mean, we at Food Pharmacy, we usually talk about don't forget to feed your good bacteria in your gut, because they make they boost your immune system, among other things. They have several important role in our bodies. But talking about skin microbiome, what is that?
Yes. So the skin microbiome, I mean, I'm also super interested in the gut microbiome. So I read your book years ago. And in one way, the microbiome and the science about both the gut microbiome and the skin microbiome is actually why I left the skincare industry. So, first of all, what is our skin microbiome? Well, it's exactly the same as our gut microbiome. So it's a skin flora with all the microorganisms that we have on our skin. We have thousands of different species living on our skin. And these are very important for us since they are producing a lot of compounds that are important for the immune system in the skin, and also anti-inflammatory compounds, and also compounds that are actually trapping water within our skin, so we get a moist and healthy skin. And what I discovered was that with all these additives that we put in our skincare products, which we have discussed, you know, during the long shelf life, and this kind of additives are needed, that could disturb the skin microbiome. So there are studies now showing that five of our most commonly used preservative systems that that are antimicrobial, they are actually disturbing our commensal skin flora, and that means the good bacteria, the bacteria that are with us, that are living with us on the skin.
Wow, that's not good at all.
That's not good. And what this has been also associated to is the normal skin problems or skin disorders that we see in the Western world, and that is rosacea, acne and eczema especially. Mm. All these diseases has been now related to a disturbed microbiome in the skin. Mm. Wow. So that is basically why also the book is fourth part of the book is actually talking about skin microbiome and postbiotics, prebiotics and probiotics. It's also a foundation for me to actually take this initiative, which we talked about before, so the Skin Gnome Project, which works on both trying to help manufacturers, but also develop skincare options that are not antimicrobial.
Mm. That sounds great. I mean, because you write that the gut and the skin are connected via the bloodstream, mm-hmm. and they are in constant contact.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not hard to imagine that what goes through your gut, as you said, with the sink,
yeah,
your skin will have a slice of that also.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.
Talking about the Skin Gnome project, your project,
mm-hmm.
the 10th commandment in your book is to learn more. The skin is our largest organ and needs consideration. And I mean, there are a lot of articles, the latest you can find on pubmed.com, but you could also follow you on skinomproject.com.
Yes.
And you have an Instagram account also.
Yeah, Skin Gnome Project. Mm. Yeah.
So tell us about Skin Gnome Project.
Yeah, Skin Gnome Project is a platform which I founded because I truly believe that the skincare industry needs to be transformed. We need to develop products which are putting our skin first and foremost.
Mm.
And coming from a dermatological background, I'm used to develop solutions that solve skin problems.
Mm.
But entering the skincare industry, I noticed that very often it was the other way around. The focus was to rather solve problems related to marketing and communication, logistics, or more the sensory aspects of the product, mm. how the product feels, for example. But I think the most important thing that we can do for our skin is, of course, to put that need foremost.
Mm.
And in that case, to compromise on other things like what we discussed now, shelf life.
Mm.
So never to compromise on the skin health.
Mm.
And that is why I started this. So I'm so lucky to be surrounded by people that and a network that truly believe in this vision as well. Mm. And a vision where your skin is always put forward first. And on this, we will never compromise. Instead, we compromise on shelf life and storage. We are also, with this platform, focusing on science and innovation within the skin microbiome.
Mm. Wow. Sounds like a great project.
Thank you. I hope so.
Mm. So check out skinomproject.com. And I'm so grateful for having you here, Johanna. Today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fantastic to be here. And it's always so nice to meet you. I always get so inspired and I always get in a very good mood.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. And I always think about how to take care of my skin. You have such a beautiful skin. So I always sit and look at your fantastic skin. I need to try this.
No, you have really nice skin, you too.
Mm. Thank you so much.
Åh, vilket mysigt avslut på detta avsnitt av Food Pharmacy-podden med Lina Närtby och Mia Klase. Medverkade gjorde också Johanna Gillbro. Och jag heter Sebastian Ring och står för musik och redigering. Vill du ha mer av Food Pharmacy så finns vi på foodpharmacy.se och på Instagram under namnet food_pharmacy. Hej!
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.